I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is March 28, 2010. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, an article entitled, Texas School Board Rewrites History. At some point during the deliberations of the Texas State Board of Education last week, that august body decided that when public school students came to study the era of the Great Society and affirmative action, they should henceforth be required to analyze any unintended consequences of those 1960s reforms. I do not know what consequences board members had in mind when they approved that measure. Texas's social studies guidelines are immensely influential with the publishers of the nation's textbooks, and for the past few months, the liberal world has watched in horror as the board's dominant conservative faction has edited its guidelines to better reflect its views of the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, and just about everything else. Still, the unintended consequences change was voted in without further discussion or explanation. I'll break in here with a comment. Last year, they attacked evolution by trying to get their Christian creationism accepted as science, in clear violation of the U.S. Constitution. They will continue to attack our laws and our schools until they achieve their stated goal, a Christian nation. Welcome to the Middle East. The article continues. Here's a suggestion. Students looking for unintended consequences should study the Texas School Board itself, as well as the four-decade-long backlash against liberalism that has given us so many culture wars. Students might analyze how the process of writing textbook standards came to be a fight over evolution and the piety of the nation's founders. They might ask how Cynthia Dunbar, who wrote in her 2008 book, One Nation Under God, that public education is clearly tyrannical and a subtly deceptive tool of perversion, came to occupy a seat on one of the most powerful public school boards in America. My comment, she came to occupy that seat as the result of a direct attack that is occurring throughout our nation by religious fundamentalists. It continues, to its critics, the proceedings appear like a sort of Texas Inquisition, in which buffoons who believe their authorities hand down half-baked opinions from overstuffed chairs. My comment, I couldn't have said it better. The article goes on. To others, however, the whole thing is probably a bold blow against the tyrannical subtlety of liberalism. Another comment. Evolution has nothing to do with liberalism. It is a scientific fact. Historical facts are independent of liberalism and conservatism. It is only the distortion of those facts that are related to liberalism and conservatism. The article continues, when the Texas Education Board insists that the word expansionism, not imperialism, be used to describe the overseas deeds of the McKinley administration, when it instructs textbook writers to always use the term free enterprise and never the term capitalism, it isn't doing so because it feels solicitude for imperialists or the big money set. My comment, expansionism is a euphemism for imperialism. Whenever someone replaces a word with a euphemism, it is because they cannot defend the action, so they use a term that they think they can defend. But calling imperialism expansionism doesn't change what colonization did to indigenous people. It only makes it sound justifiable. The article continues. Heavens no, board members are doing it to vindicate the little guy, to wrest the language away from an intellectual elite. As Don McElroy, one of the leaders of the board's conservative faction, put it in last year's debate over evolution, somebody's got to stand up to these experts. Don, the only people qualified to stand up to experts are other experts, not frustrated dentists like you. The article continues. Indeed, outrage against the conspiracy of intellectuals seemed to lurk just below the surface during last week's deliberations, breaking into the open during moments of rancor. Board member Terry Leo said, "I see no need, frankly, to compromise with liberal professors from academia," when someone challenged the move to nix the word capitalism. "That's part of the problem of how we end up with distorted and liberal biased textbooks, is because that's who's writing them." So, Terry, why is your distorted and biased view better? Continuing, "Sometimes the board imagined itself taking on even grander tyrants. When the chairwoman, Gail Lowe, asked for objections to a measure requiring students to analyze the decline in value of the U.S. dollar, including the abandonment of the gold standard, one member joked, "I'll bet the Federal Reserve would object." Oh, they'll teach Alan Greenspan not to mess with Texas. "I have no desire to excuse academia's failings. Its peer review system sometimes encourages fads and self-reinforcing groupthink, but at least it demands fairness and careful research. The state's Board of Education, by contrast, feels entitled to enforce its homemade party line with a rigidity that no pinko would dare to dream of. Back in January, for instance, it struck the author of Brown Bear, What Do You See? From a list of people for third graders to study because it got him confused with the similarly named author of Ethical Marxism, a book that, according to board member Pat Hardy, makes very strong critiques of capitalism and the American system. My comment: yet another example of gross mental incompetence. They can't even perform simple functions without embarrassing themselves. Instead of worshiping ignorance, they should reconsider the value of experts. Continuing, "And as we all know, those who criticize capitalism deserve to have no place in public life, especially in this age of affluence and financial probity." The board later discovered its error and reinstated the Brown Bear author. The history wars are heating up wherever conservative populism is on the march. My comment? Unfortunately, it is on the march everywhere. The article resumes. "Yesterday's Washington Post described a press conference at which former House Majority Leader Dick Armey, now the de facto Tea Partier-in-Chief, could be heard celebrating the small government conservative movement and bitterly assailing those who do not cherish America the way we do and who did not read the Federalist Papers. That's when crude reality intervened. According to the Post, an audience member asked Mr. Armey to explain his reverence for the Federalist Papers in light of the fact that their principal author, Alexander Hamilton, was widely regarded then and now as an advocate of a strong central government. Like his fellow Texans, Mr. Armey immediately resorted to anti-intellectualism. He suggested that the only ones who saw Hamilton in such a way were today's modern, ill-informed political science professors. Well, Dick, perhaps if you hadn't fallen asleep while you were in those political science classes, you would have learned how history really was instead of promoting history the way you want it to be." The article concludes, "But you can't hold history off by projecting upon it simple fantasies of your own virtue. Not even the holy hand of the Texas School Board has that kind of power." My final comment: the holy hand is the problem. When Texas replaces its ghost worshippers with rational thinking people who live in the real world, maybe then Texas will start making decisions consistent with a modern 21st century civilization. And now we move to the science segment. Today's topic: the cloak of invisibility may soon be a reality. German scientists say they have successfully used a new material to render an object invisible in three dimensions for the first time. Previous efforts at so-called invisibility cloaks could only hide objects from light coming in one direction. The material changes the behavior of light rays to transform space. The material, made up of tiny crystals with air spaces in between, shielded the object from infrared light, and the team is now trying to recreate the effect in the spectrum of light visible to humans. The object cloaked was minuscule, but scientists say the technology will work at any scale, and we could soon be not seeing much bigger objects. And now the arena goes abroad. Today we travel to Bangladesh, where a man was beheaded to redden bricks. A fortune teller calls for human sacrifice. A Bangladeshi man was beheaded in a bizarre ritual to improve a local brick business. When owners became concerned that bricks in a northern village were losing their sought-after reddish hue, a fortune teller encouraged a human sacrifice. Four laborers following owners' orders killed a 26-year-old fellow worker and baked his head in a kiln in an effort to redden the bricks. The workers have been busted, and police are searching for the owners and the fortune teller. My comment: can you just imagine losing your life and everything you've worked for and dreamed about and never being able to see your family or friends again, all just because some morons wanted redder bricks? And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Plutarch, born 46 AD, died in 120 AD at the age of 74. He was a Greek historian, biographer, essayist, and Middle Platonist, known primarily for his parallel lives and moralia. He was born to a prominent family in Chaeronea, Boeotia, a town about 20 miles east of Delphi. And now for the quote from Plutarch: "The mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be kindled."
Are you ready, Goose?